Welcome to the 41st episode of Cartoon Avatars. This is a special bonus part one of the episodes this week. I wanted to do a topical episode to talk about everything that was going on with Twitter and go through kind of what's happened here in the last 10 days or so. And then the FTX news broke. That was, I guess, brewing a little bit over the course of this past weekend. And then on Monday, we heard a little bit more. And then by Tuesday, it was announced that there was a agreement, or at least a memorandum of understanding or something in place. I forget the technical term, between Binance and FTX, where Binance would theoretically acquire FTX, which is huge news in the crypto ecosystem. I'm kind of in shock that this happened. And so I asked around who was the best person to talk through what actually happened, and was directed to a pseudonymous person on Twitter, Mike Bergersberg, who we had a conversation with, kind of talking through how everything happened. This was recorded, I guess, because all this stuff is happening in real time. Should note, this was recorded late Tuesday evening, in which we were talking this through. And so I guess for perspective, as everyone hears this, just know if anything else happens, that was when we knew, or that was the point at which we had all the information. So trust you'll enjoy it. It's about a 45-minute discussion, goes into the history of FTX and how this ultimately played out and what the implications are for the broader crypto ecosystem. So look forward to you listening to that now. And be on the lookout for part two of this week's episodes, talking through Twitter later this week. So thanks everyone for listening. I guess something of an emergency podcast here. We are joined today by Mike Bergersberg, who is, I guess that's a pseudonymous name, but Mike is someone in the crypto ecosystem, or a skeptic in the crypto ecosystem, that has kind of followed deeply a lot of the different machinations that have gone on. And with FTX seemingly blowing up or selling in the last little bit, I polled a few people about who the best person to have on to kind of explain what happened and how we ended up here and where we go from here. And Mike was the name that actually came up twice. So Mike, maybe can you give a little bit of your background and why you were recommended to me by more than one person?
Yeah, it's glad to hear that people are recommending me as an expert. It's kind of scary. I didn't learn about this space until about a year ago. Kind of got interested in it when I found out about Tether and kind of some of the weird stuff that was going on there. And I've always had a long fascination with fraud going back to throughout my whole life, just in like kind of like a curiosity. So I started looking into these things and ended up spending a lot of time writing and researching about the Celsius network, which was a massive Ponzi scheme that was actually very closely tied to FTX in Alameda that collapsed back in June. So I think people kind of got some attention, or I kind of got some attention from that, number of other articles as well. But then recently I started looking into FTX and their relationship with Celsius, and that led me to kind of the realization that Alameda and FTX were in very serious financial trouble.
And so maybe just to back up, I mean, you helped uncover elements of the Celsius, I guess, Ponzi, as it would seem to be known now. But what was your involvement in that and the forensics that actually went into figuring out this? It was kind of a house of cards.
Well, so I started out, I don't know, because like when I was first learning about crypto, like a lot of the stuff doesn't make sense to somebody who's never seen it before. Like all the weird DeFi stuff and the decentralized exchanges and all these weird protocols and things. The one thing I recognized from having this weird fascination with fraud was people going out and saying, hey, look at us. We're these very trustworthy individuals who are offering these high rates of return with very low risk. And I figured that was probably a good place to start. And I picked Celsius because actually of the CEO, who was named Alex Mashinsky, who, when I looked into his background, he claimed to be a very successful CEO who had invented VoIP, which would be like Skype or whatever. And of course, all of that was false. It turned out like most of his backstory was invented or incredibly exaggerated. And that was kind of the red flag that got me started down that rabbit hole, was saying, okay, well, if the guy running the company who founded it is a serial liar about pretty much everything about his background, there has to be more to it than that. And so sort of in the process of that, I kind of taught myself how to use these like blockchain analytics tools and things, and kind of just went from there and ended up finding some kind of interesting stuff that, you know, helped convince a lot of people to get their money out before it collapsed, which I'm proud of that part of it. You know, but obviously it wasn't enough to save the day for everybody, unfortunately. But of course, the nature of Ponzi is you can't save the day for everybody. So
yeah, definitely. And what definition, I guess, and this might seem a little pedantic, but in terms of Ponzi's and like how you think about what actually is a Ponzi scheme versus what is a liquidity crunch, or where where things are over levered, and if you do a run on the bank in general, there's just not going to be enough assets because of the leverage that exists. Where do you draw the demarcation in some of these things where one is fraud, or at least a misrepresentation in a Ponzi scheme, versus another is just leverage that exists within the financial system or the crypto system, as the case may be here?
Well, I mean, that's honestly, it's a hard question to have a really precise answer to that doesn't offend somebody. The long and short of it is a Ponzi scheme is something that's unsustainable and does not create anything of value. And basically relies on paying. The classical definition is that you pay back your old customers with new customers' money. In the case of Celsius, you know, their product supposedly was generating yield on people's assets, essentially pretending to be a bank, kind of acting more like a hedge fund, but really they were a Ponzi because they never actually generated enough yield to pay the yield that they were claiming to generate. So, I mean, they were committing fraud in that sense. They never actually did what they claimed to be doing. And whether Alameda and FTX were engaged in something similar, I think you can make an argument that they were.
Yeah, I mean, the Celsius one and the yields and all that was particularly egregious because the yields were being paid out by the deposits from new customers as they were coming in, right? So I guess in that sense,
that's it. And then the other thing, the part of it is novel in crypto, and I've kind of taken it to calling it a flywheel scheme because that was the Celsius model. They called it the flywheel, which was involved using their token as a way to kind of theoretically store value and use it as a way to kind of bolster their balance sheet. This is what all the crypto companies are doing, essentially. Any of them that have generated a token, this is what got FTX into trouble and Alameda into trouble. They essentially are using an asset that isn't really real as collateral to borrow against. And they're able to create that through basically manipulating fake markets.
Yeah,
I mean, so it's kind of different.
So let's go to the FTX example here, and how we ended up where we are. Maybe if you can give kind of a brief primer on FTX and Alameda and the relationship between the two, and then what transpired over the course of the last couple of days.
Well, so I think we're still learning a lot about the relationship between those two companies because it was obfuscated for a long time by its founder, or both the founder of both companies and the major owner of both companies, which was named Sam Bankman-Fried. Alameda, I believe, was founded first as a quote unquote crypto hedge fund. So essentially trading, engaging in market making across different platforms. And then FTX was the exchange that was founded shortly thereafter by the same individuals. And the claim was always that in spite of the fact that they were owned by the same people, essentially controlled by the same people, and had lots of on-chain activity between the two of them, that they were somehow independent entities. And it looks like they were essentially the same entity from every rational perspective of how entangled their finances appear to have been. So what essentially, long story short of this, is that FTX had generated this token called FTT. And had kind of used that as, I believe it's part of like an ICO or something where they use that to fund some of their operations. And I might be wrong about that because I've literally just learned about this a week ago or a week and a half ago. And essentially what they did was they retained most of that on their balance sheet. And then they had a small amount of it floating around out in space. And they manipulated the market to make it appear as though this token was worth something like $7 billion worth in market cap. And so they would have had, like, they had like $6 billion worth on their balance sheet. And so what happened was that, you know, nobody really knew the extent of this until CoinDesk had a leak of Alameda's balance sheet from June 30th of 2022, showing that they were holding like almost $6 billion worth of this, totally illiquid, worthless coin that nobody wants and nobody holds. And it looked like they were actually using this as collateral to borrow from actual money against from other platforms and under unknown individuals. We still don't know exactly who they were borrowing from. Essentially, so that exposed a massive weakness in their system.
So at a simple level, like any of these coins have been made up by someone, right? And so in this case, SBF, Sam Bankman-Fried, who is a fascinating individual, right? And he's been on the cover of a ton of magazines. Obviously, they had his bouncing head on the as one of the Super Bowl ads, right? And he's bought naming rights for FTX of the Miami Heat Stadium. They're on umpires within Major League Baseball. I think they have Cal Berkeley's football stadium. I mean, this has been sort of the company, the blue chip, if you can call it that, of the crypto ecosystem over the last few years. And he's a fascinating individual, right? He believes in this effective altruism, and his whole goal, it seemed, and even at least as it was told to the media, his whole goal in becoming rich was to be able to give back and influence society and all that. But he did live in the Bahamas, right? I think he's the son of two Stanford professors, maybe. And he lived in the Bahamas outside of U.S. regulation. And he's been a pretty active proponent in trying to shape regulation as it exists in the crypto ecosystem within the U.S. But he was set up in the Bahamas. And so I guess Sam Bankman-Fried had this Alameda Research, which was a crypto hedge fund, quote unquote, and he made up a coin, right? And it was called FTT. And then one day he said, hey, we have this coin and we're going to say it has the value of X and we're going to hold on to Y amount. And then we're going to put Z amount out into the ether and it's going to be a market, right? Essentially, that's what happened. And now your point on the manipulation side was that they were actually, they would buy when they needed to make it go go up in price. They would sell when they did go down. They were saying it was basically this made up amount of money that they had on their balance sheet. And they were able to collateralize that and say, hey, look, we have this amount of money sitting on our balance sheet. It might be in this FTT token, but you should be able to lend us whatever, Solana or Bitcoin or Ether or dollars, right? Because we have
dollars. And this is actually pretty much the same. One of the reasons I was able to recognize this really quickly and kind of, I think one of the reasons I got to it as quickly as I did was because I had seen it before with Celsius. So what Celsius did, they basically had the same scheme where they had their own token. The company retained a very large portion of them on its own balance sheet and then was holding a very large amount of them as customer deposits. So there's a very small amount floating around in the ecosystem. And essentially what Celsius was apparently doing was taking user deposits and then using them to pump the price of this coin up. So they were actually buying the token on FTX. It looks like they bought over 40 million of their token. It would have been like a couple hundred million dollar expenditure at least over about a year to drive the price of that token up. And then around that period of time is when Celsius announced their massive equity raise with WestCap and the Canadian pension fund La CDPQ for $750 million. So in that instance, what they did was they used this token to make their balance sheet look healthy so that people who maybe were, despite being institutional investors, maybe not very sophisticated investors, at least as far as crypto was concerned, and they looked at this balance sheet and said, oh, look at this. They have all this. They have like $1 billion in net equity. They're going to be fine. And of course, reality that none of that actually was real. And once the company was under financial pressure from sort of withdrawals and essentially they weren't, you know, making enough money to pay out the yield, they weren't able to support the price of the token anymore and it collapsed. And that's basically what we just saw happen with FTT. FTT is that they made a little mistake and they gave their biggest competitor something like 10% of the market cap as part of his buyout deal because at one time he owned a chunk of FTX. But
yeah, and I want to get to how Binance fits into all this. But I guess in general, right, if I were to take a more effectively altruistic view of what happened here, like, isn't this essential? Shouldn't this have been known to the people that were involved that that this was going on? And I guess I'm curious as to what the malicious and cynical element of this whole thing is. To some extent, like, you could make the case that all of commercial paper and how the U.S. System actually works for the economy is some elements of a shared belief system that exists between people about what different things are worth. And ultimately, we've done away with the gold standard, right? And so there's not things backing these institutions in the way that there once was. And we saw what happened with Bear and Lehman, course of the financial crisis as well. And so I guess as we're kind of unpacking this, what do you think the malicious or the cynical element of this whole thing unwinding? Was there something specifically that you would point to that seemed like it was most nefarious, or is it just the extent to which it could unwind and how quickly it did unwind that makes it, you know, if it looks like, it quacks like a duck and walks like a duck, it is a duck?
Well, so the first part of that, you know, there is a, you know, the philosophical argument, what is a Ponzi? That's what kind of what I was alluding to at the beginning when you asked me that question. People will say, oh, well, governments are Ponzi's because they print money and they have debt. And I mean, okay, maybe, I guess. The difference is that we're not talking about a company based in the Bahamas tied to criminals.
Yeah.
Right? That's the difference. Which one's going to collapse first is the kind of the point that I'm trying to make, right? In terms of what's egregious and what, I mean, these guys, of course they know what they're doing. I mean, come on, like Sam Bankman-Fried, like whatever else he is, not a dumb guy, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like maybe he's not as smart as everybody thought he was. I mean, clearly, because who gets themselves locked into this kind of stupid Ponzi scam, right? But they know what they're doing. Of course they know what they're doing. And what they're doing is they're using this as a way to suck real money out of suckers. That's all this system is designed to do. It was designed to do back in 2017 when they were all having their ICOs with their fake companies. It's the same scam that's been run over and over again throughout history, just using blockchain as an excuse rather than something else.
So all this was discovered. There was a June 30th balance sheet of Alameda Research, which is the hedge fund associated with FTX. So maybe up to that part in the story, can you take us to what happened after that, in particular, where CZ and Binance get involved?
Yeah. And it's funny because, like, it happened so quickly, and I'm still kind of processing all of it. So CoinDesk published this article. I have my own sources essentially confirming that it was correct and actually some more details about just how much money they have. Because it turns out FTT isn't the only scam, worthless, totally illiquid token that Alameda has in very large size on their balance sheet. They have another of other tokens linked to other projects that were kind of pioneered by Sam and his colleagues, also totally worthless. Another over $1 billion worth on their balance sheet, in addition to the $5.8 billion in FTT. Anyway, so, you know, I published an article that showed basically just because the CoinDesk article was good, but all I did was say, hey, they have a bunch of this token. So all I did was take it one step further and say, hey, they have a lot of this token and this token is worthless. And here's why. And it's very simple to prove that because, like we've already talked about, it's just simple market mechanics. If you own 95% of the market and nobody else wants to own what you have, is worth nothing or very close to nothing. So I published that and then it got a lot of attention. And then I believe it was Sunday morning, I got somebody sending a message.
I'm sorry,
when did
timestamp all this stuff. So the CoinDesk article came out when was that originally published?
I think Thursday.
And they didn't leave any, was there any, was there a implication that they left in that article about like, hey, what does this mean, dot, dot, dot? Or was it like, hey, this is an interesting thing and just moved on?
They hinted at it. I mean, anybody who like I, if like you just look at it and read it, you can tell that there's a problem here. But the thing is, what they didn't show was that, you know, you can argue that there's no value in anything in crypto. I'm totally amenable to that argument, right? Bitcoin is worthless. Possible. Maybe it has some intrinsic value. I don't know. But the difference is that you can show very easily that these tokens are worthless. And that's the step that they didn't take. And that's the step that I did take. And I think that's why my work got a little attention as a result.
And I want to zoom in. I just want to talk about that for a second. The distinction of this being worthless versus every other coin, I guess, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but the distinction that you would draw is just the number of people that agree Bitcoin's worth something. It is a lot. I don't know what the number is, but there's thousands, if not millions, of transactions a day on fractionalized Bitcoin, and people collectively agreeing, hey, you know, once upon a time it was 69,000, then it became 20, 18, 16, whatever, we're fluctuating. But there are tons of people that are collectively trading and agreeing that this is worth something and there's a price here. The right. distinction on this one specifically is there's not a lot of people agreeing that there's a market for this to be worth anything, right?
Yeah, it's not only that, it's that none of the other participants in the market are significant participants, right? Like if one entity owns, you know, like well over 80%, and then another entity, which is Binance, owns another like 10%, and the rest probably is owned, honestly, a lot of it's probably owned by FTX. It's not an Alameda's balance sheet, but it's, you know what I mean? Like it's almost entirely owned by them. That means that it's not realizable assets if you can't sell it. So that was long and short of it is obvious, right?
Yeah.
Like it's kind of going back to like, is the government a Ponzi scheme? I mean, maybe, but if I'm going to bet on a Ponzi scheme to collapse, it's going to be the one based in the Bahamas run by criminals before the government. Right.
Yeah. Well, and the government has, yes, I don't mean to overextrapolate the government analogy, but the government has, we've clearly collectively agreed as United States and also as for the most part, the world that the system works and that there's some store of value associated with the dollar. And we can argue about inflation, but, people will take dollars in exchange for something. And we have at least 300 million people in the U.S. that are willing to ascribe some value to the U.S. dollar in exchange for goods or services, right? In this case, right. that is not true. So now this article is published the end of last week, and your spidey senses kind of go off and say, hey, that's a lot of FTT and Solana and whatever else for them to have.
Basically, yeah, I had some other information too, but yeah, essentially. And once they published it, I felt comfortable going ahead with my analysis. And because I'd already been looking into them extensively because of the connection with Celsius, I already had like annotated a lot of the wallets and I could kind of check some of the work and was familiar with kind of the general architecture of how these kind of scams work. So it was pretty straightforward. So on the 4th, I published that. It started getting a lot of attention. And then on the 6th in the morning, somebody messaged me saying, hey, you know, CZ, the guy who runs the Binance exchange, has liked your post. And so I go to his account or his thing on Twitter. And sure enough, he's liked my FUD article, which, you know, historically, anybody who publishes anything critical in crypto gets attacked by everybody. Typically, they all circle the wagons, regardless of whether they're competitors or not. Everybody circles the wagons and protects each other and says, well, it's part of the community and we don't hurt the community, even if it's obvious that there's a fraud going on. But in this instance, he's liking my post. And then a short time later, we note that he moves a vast amount of his FTT token, some $580 million worth, from a cold wallet to one of the Binance exchange wallets. And then a short time later, he tweets out, oh, by the way, I read some stuff that makes me concerned, and I'm going to liquidate all of it.
And so just to back up on this, so the crypto community, and I think this is true of, I mean, the banking system back in 2008 or whatever, but when it's better to be a smaller fish that's a part of something that's worth more than it is to try to survive as a bigger fish of something that's worth less or near zero, right? And so collectively, go ahead.
I think that, that's exactly what we're going to get to, is that the calculus of this equation has changed. That used to be true. And I think what's happened now with everything else that's happening in the world there probably isn't a lot of actual dollars left in the ecosystem. And the Ponzi's are eating one another because it's all they can do. So what they've decided, CZ is an example of this. I mean, he's had these tokens sitting around for a long time. He could have done this at any time. He chose
and
now.
CZ, and just to back up on this, CZ was an investor in FTX, right? Originally when it was getting going. CZ he was a Chinese citizen, is a Chinese citizen. What's Binance's affiliation? They've been is that a third rail topic?
The Tai Chi papers, have you come across
them? No, I don't know.
Oh, yeah, they have documents. I can't remember from what year, a couple of years ago, internal documents from Binance. Essentially, no one knows where Binance is based. And that's actually an intentional move by them to try to avoid regulations, which obviously should be a major red flag for anybody. As far as I know, CZ never lives in one place for very long. He's constantly on the move, as is his company. They don't have, as far as I know, they don't have official headquarters anywhere.
And so if Sam Bankman-Fried was living in the Bahamas, but coming to the United States and trying to appear before Congress and, you know, was born to Stanford professors or whatever the case may be, and went to Harvard and, you know, all of that, CZ is much more of the black cat in this situation, right? CZ is the one.
I don't know if that's fair. Like, they're all.
So it appeared, I guess, prior to all of this being uncovered.
That's true to some extent. I mean, Sam definitely played that up. And there's a lot of speculation about why did CZ do this to Sam? You know, part of it is that Sam was shitting on CZ for a long time, saying, like, I remember there, I think the quote was like, he was basically, because he was going to Washington, D.C. to lobby these people. And he made a comment basically like, oh, well, CZ can't go to D.C., implying that he's going to get arrested or something, which, I mean, there have been reports that there are multiple law enforcement investigations into Binance. So it's very possible that he would have some issues should he arrive in Washington, D.C. and start lobbying people. But Sam was saying this stuff publicly, and people are hypothesizing that maybe that's part of the reason why CZ decided to take him out. I think it's a little more obvious than that. He just got to take out his largest competitor. And I think that there's a reason for it that goes deeper than just personal animosity. I think it's probably that. It might just be just as much a move of desperation than anything, but I guess we're going to find out.
Yes. Yeah, so at that point, so CZ likes your post. You have all this analysis that says, hey, there's probably not a lot of on the balance sheet here that exists in any liquid currency that can actually be exchanged in a meaningful way for dollars, right? Or whatever, for anything that actually has a mainstream market. And so CZ likes this post and then says, hey, I'm noticing some things that associated with the FTT token specifically, right? Because they had been gifted, part of the buyout was that Binance had, as part of being an investor, part of the buyout was that they got some percentage of FTT tokens in exchange for their equity.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I would say, like, I don't want to take credit for it. Like, I'm sure. I mean, come on, the CZ is the industry, runs the biggest exchange in the world. He's been involved in this business far longer than me or probably just about anybody else. There's no way he didn't know that this FTT token was worthless and that Alameda had a problem with it. I'm sure he's known that for a while and probably just said, I mean, I don't want to say that he orchestrated this because it's, I mean, who knows? But at the very least, he saw an opportunity to capitalize on the attention and kind of spark a bank run. I think that was the intention. Definitely. I mean, that's the only reason you would do what he did.
I wanted to give you credit, but I appreciate your humility in passing it off. So,
I mean, maybe
so
I did. I don't know, but yeah, probably not.
I don't know. It could have been me, though. So then what transpired? He said, hey, I've seen things that lead me to believe that this doesn't actually add up. And he started dumping his FTT.
Yeah. I mean, we don't even actually know if he sold any or very much. Basically, what he said is, okay, well, I have all this token. I'm going to sell it over kind of an undisclosed period of time to try and, quote unquote, not hurt the market. Basically telling you he's going to bleed Sam out to dry. And then he subsequently actually made other posts, like essentially comparing FTX to the Luna Terra collapse and other things, basically. And it's funny because it's like at the same time he's going, well, I don't want to hurt him. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to hurt the industry. I don't want to hurt anybody. I just want to get, you know, I want to separate and finish this divorce. He called it a divorce between the two companies.
That's what CZ said on Twitter about this.
Yeah, he referred to it as a divorce between the two companies. It's like, well, it's time for us to like end the marriage or whatever. And like, come on, like there's only one reason. If you really wanted to sell the tokens, he could have gone to FTX and Alameda and said, hey guys, I want to sell. You know, you don't want me to go into the market and try to sell this. So what are you going to give me? Like if that had been his goal, right? If his goal had been to make money off of this thing, that's what he would have done. Instead, he's essentially allowed the market to front run him. So why would he do that unless his goal was something other than to make money off of this deal?
Yeah. So CZ has this FTT. He says, hey, I don't believe in this. And at that point, it started speculation that the strength of coupled with some of the analysis that you did, as well as potentially others, coupled with the CoinDesk article, it started a run on FTX with people starting to make withdrawals in real time, trying to get their money out.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's basically it's very simple. Yeah.
And so when fear exists in general, while all this stuff goes on, right? And so as we kind of zoom out to the overall ecosystem here, when there's fear that your bank isn't going to have your money or that any depository institution isn't going to have your money, people generally panic and they start withdrawing or trying to get their hands on their money, right? And so that happened. And if you're levered in any meaningful way, meaning, hey, maybe you've lent beyond what you actually have stored in the bank at any one time, then there's going to be liquidity crunches that exist, right? And much in the same way, if I walked into my bank and with a LeBron James, and LeBron tried to ask for his $100 million that he has sitting in one bank, they would probably say, hey, we need a little bit of time back to you. If you're levered at all, you might need a little bit of time to get back to some of the people. Now, the issue here was that there wasn't actually a path based on that balance sheet to get the money back to people because they were levered based on this illiquid asset. So people started.
Here's the thing to specify here, though, is that the balance sheet belongs to Alameda Research. This is not FTX's balance sheet. It's the balance sheet of this supposedly entirely separate company. It's not FTX. So the fact that, okay, it sparks this rumor that Alameda is in trouble. So people say, well, Alameda and FTX are related, so maybe we should pull out. The fact of the matter is, in theory, right, if what they were saying was true and FTX wasn't lending their customers' assets to FTX, or sorry, FTX wasn't lending their customers' assets to Alameda, Alameda failing shouldn't necessarily have any effect on whether or not FTX can give their customers their deposits back.
Yep.
So
no, that makes what sense. So these two things were too intertwined, right?
They were supposedly separate, but they weren't. That's essentially what we find out and what people always kind of knew, but nobody believed or suspected the extent of the closeness between these two companies. I mean, you can look on chain. So we were talking about the bank run. People start withdrawing massive amounts of money from FTX. Where does the money to pay out the withdrawals come from? Well, it turns out that a very substantial amount of that money comes through Alameda's wallets. So Alameda is sending money back to FTX. It proves that beyond any doubt that they had FTX's deposits. And then the other thing you have to consider here is we talk about a liquidity crunch versus insolvency. FTX was valued at $32 billion very recently by equity raises. So if they're willing to give themselves their biggest competitor and probably wipe out most or all of that equity, that has to tell you that it's not only a liquidity issue. They couldn't find anybody to front them the money for that. If they actually had the assets, they should have been able to find somebody to give them some sort of deal to front them the assets to pay back the customers while they were, you know, retrieving those assets. What that tells me is that they're almost certainly insolvent, not just illiquid.
And so what does this mean for the, so obviously now what was announced earlier is that, I guess it's a memorandum of understanding or intent or something, where
a non-binding agreement,
where Binance has the ability to get out of, buying FTX, but it seems, that at least as it stands right now, that Binance is going to buy FTX, as far as we know, or what's been published.
I don't necessarily believe that. I mean, if you look at what, obviously we're just going off of what has been tweeted out into the atmosphere here. CZ is very clear that this is a non-binding agreement. They haven't even started due diligence for this agreement yet. So I would not. I mean, and there was an article from Bloomberg Crypto that I thought was incredibly irresponsible because their title. And there's other places that have done this too, where the headline is Binance is going to buy them. There's no formal agreement here. They have no obligation to do anything. This isn't Elon Musk, buying Twitter accidentally, then being forced to actually, go through with it. This is them saying, hey, we might buy you maybe if we want to. But there's no guarantees here. I would not count that chicken before it hatches. Let's put it that way.
And so what does this mean in your mind for the ecosystem at large? This happened to Celsius, right? FTX is one of the biggest names out there. Binance isn't a name that people that are in the mainstream know. I think FTX probably is, and Coinbase is probably the most notable. Obviously, we've seen the, I think Bitcoin was down today. Ethereum was down today. Like a bunch of the market was pulled down by this. What's your opinion on what this means for the ecosystem at large? And are we going to see more and more of this happening, or what's your take there?
Well, first to clarify, so my conflicts of interest here, I do not own crypto. I do not own Bitcoin, have never owned crypto, have never owned Bitcoin, have never traded it. I do own some puts on Coinbase, based just much as on their, I think, really poor management as anything. But so that my opinion would be colored by my financial interests. But I think that anytime something is big, like this is the equivalent of like, I mean, is it comparable to like a Lehman Brothers type situation? Yeah, absolutely. No question. I mean, FTX is one of the most valuable companies in this entire quote unquote industry. Alameda is tied to everybody and was one of the biggest market makers. I mean, Alameda pulled Alameda had over $30 billion worth of the Tether stablecoin issued to them over their lifetime. $30 billion. They were probably one of the largest, if not the largest, market maker out there. So when they're gone, I mean, I don't know if you could predict what's going to happen because we don't even know who their counterparties are, but I mean, and I'm seeing numbers flowing around anywhere from between $1 billion hole to a $6 to $7 billion hole in their balance sheet. Celsius was like $2 billion. So I think that it could have very serious repercussions. I mean, Three Road Capital, I think, was like $2 billion as well. So this thing dwarfs them.
Three Arrows is another hedge fund that went bankrupt.
Yeah, Three Arrows was just really dumb. Like that was like obvious, like, really dumb. I think that was a couple $1 billion hole as well that got basically filled up. A couple big counterparties got, well, Voyager Digital, which was a publicly traded company in Canada, which was also like a crypto bank slash exchange. They went bankrupt because they had such large exposure to Three Arrows Capital. And then FTX was going to bail out Voyager. Obviously, they're not going to be doing that anymore. So right there's a casualty. I think we're going to have some interesting times ahead of us. That's all I can say. I honestly can't tell you. I'm trying to work on that now. I mean, this is something I do as a hobby. I don't make any money from it. So it's kind of like I do it when I have time. But I'm trying to figure out who's the next body to float to the surface. I definitely think there are going to be some bodies, though.
So, and much in that same way, who's holding whatever Solana, or who's holding other people with FTT that they are levered against, just who else are going to have these?
Exactly. Who are the counterparties?
Who are the counterparties that sit opposite of this? Right. What, And so what's your perspective on, and I don't want you to psychoanalyze, but it sounds like, from your perspective on the way in, like how we ended up in this position, it seems, at least if I'm reading your tone here, it seems like you felt like this is an inevitability that this would happen at some point, and that how it came to be with CZ posting on Twitter and all the speculation and all that, it was just a matter of time if someone did this.
Yeah, well, I mean, it didn't have to necessarily go this way. There's a number of different ways it could collapse. But at the end of the day, you can only get away with creating money out of thin air for so long, unless you're the United States government. Okay, like if you can create these fake tokens and spin up billions of dollars in value and borrow all these assets and everything else, but at some point you're going to have to pay it back. Some point somebody's going to say, "Hey, I want my money." Whether it's today, tomorrow, next week, next month, a year, it's going to happen. And clearly, you know, Celsius was, I mean, in my opinion, and not to discredit myself because I worked very hard on it, it was a pretty obvious Ponzi scam to me. I mean, it's like the classic example of what a Ponzi scam looks like. FTX was considered a really legitimate business. I mean, literally $32 billion valuation.
Totally.
Right?
Some of the most credible venture investors in
Tom Brady, right? They have Tom Brady as their face. I mean, think about it. They bought Tom Brady. That's pretty good. Like, yeah. They named it a stadium. They had literally you mentioned the umpires, and I forgot to say, literally when I saw FTX on the umpires' uniforms, I just like the irony of that. And I'm sure that was, I mean, sure, Sam thought that was funny. He had been laughing his ass off, right? I mean, he had to have, unless he just has no sense of humor. I mean, like, come on, right? That's like Bernie Madoff putting his name on the referees in the NFL or something. Like, kidding me?
So it seems like you're, and obviously far more stuff is going to come out of this, but you think all along the people within FTX knew what was going on here, and it was just a matter of time that this.
I mean, I think the people at the top had to have known. I mean, from my experience looking at Celsius, I think a lot of the employees there are not to really be held to blame because they really didn't know. I mean, what they were told was incomplete information. And so I'm guessing a lot of the people working for them had no clue that they were what they were. I mean, if you're not the person working in the like department of the company that's moving assets around, right? You're not going to know that they're sending all the assets off to Sam's sister company, you know? So probably it's very possible very few people actually knew what was happening. And saw the glitzy offices and the big investments and Tom Brady and all this other stuff and the names on all these stadiums and everything and thought, oh, well, has to be legitimate, which is the same story that happens you can go back in history, happens every time. Enron was the same thing, right? Very few people knew Enron was a scam. There's a very small group of people that actually knew that inside the company. But yeah, I'm sure Sam had to have known for a long time that this was coming. I mean, the former head of Alameda, his name is another Sam Trabuco. He actually departed just a few months ago, and everybody was kind of speculating, well, why would he do that? Why would he leave this company that he's been at for so long? And I guess we know the answer now.
And the way this actually plays out for Sam, obviously this is going to take a long bit of unwinding to figure out who all the counterparties are and all of that. He's based in the Bahamas, which I don't know what reciprocity exists there, but
there is reciprocity.
There is.
Yeah, unfortunately, I feel bad for the guy. Maybe he'll go to Dubai or something. I don't know. It's possible. Maybe he'll join. What's his name? The guys from Three Arrows, I think, are supposedly hiding out there too, and they can all hide out together. And they can plot their comeback. Maybe they can have a new token or something.
Well, it's certainly, it's sad, to see how all of this played out. And in some ways, I mean, I guess.
And there's a lot more to come. There's a lot more. I posted this a little while ago, but you know, when Celsius first went under, they were saying the hole was maybe a few hundred million dollars. It ended up being like $2.4 billion. So my guess is whatever number we're hearing right now, it will probably be bigger. And it will take time. It's not like, Go ahead.
Do you think this bleeds over into the U.S. actual economy?
I mean, I don't know. There are a couple of banks. I am also another disclaimer, I'm sure. Signature Bank, which operates Signet, which is a stablecoin thing. I think they're affiliated with USDC. Actually, turned out Celsius had accounts there too, which I didn't know that before I went short them. But there's Silvergate Bank and there's Signature Bank, which are very involved in the stablecoin industry. And a very large portion of their deposits are stablecoin related deposits. My speculation is that they've been also lending to the VC firms and things that are associated with crypto, but I have not a lot of evidence of that. But I think it's possible that some folks maybe get burned in the real world. Yeah, I mean, look at it this way. There's a lot of VC firms that had put a lot of money into FTX that equity no longer exists. I mean, even if it turned out, even if tomorrow FTX said, oh, hey, actually, you know what, guys, we have all the money. We'll pay you guys out. Nobody's going to use their, like, they're done, right? Like their brand is destroyed. Whatever is left is not worth anything. And so there are some big name VC firms, and I don't remember all the names, so you have to look it up. It's all public. There's some very big names that got burned big time on this. At the very least, what's going to happen?
I'm friends with a lot of them. I'm glad you're not rattling them off. I'm friends with a lot of them. So.
Oh, you want me to pull a name up? I can do
that.
No,
thank you. No, thank you. I prefer you didn't.
I mean, that's at least something for the viewers to do.
Do your own research.
The fact is that if all these guys get burned in a big way, they're going to be a little less eager to invest further in this crypto space. They're also going to have less interest in supporting these projects further when they come back to them begging for more money. So even if a certain projects aren't directly exposed to this, I think it's going to have a very big effect on the psychology of investing in this space, and long term is going to have very significant consequences. Because FTX is a very different animal from what Celsius was, or from what 3AC was, or what Luna and Terra were. It's a completely different animal.
Yeah. Well, Mike, thanks for doing this. This is it's a fascinating time to be studying all this stuff, and it seems like you do this out of your own hobby to find these types of things. So, I appreciate you uncovering some of these things on the side on your own.